back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively into the holidays. Want to give some love to our friends at the Maryland Lottery because we're going to let ourselves play. It is my 30th anniversary. I hope it does not begin with the Cleveland Browns defeating the Ravens on Sunday. My 30th anniversary is the 13th of December. We're going to be celebrating on the 9th this Thursday at the Beaumont in Catonsville in the 21228. Don Moeller's got the place packed from 2 until 5. And then next Wednesday, I'll be in my homeland of Dundalk. I'll be at Costas on Wednesday afternoon. I hope everybody stops by and says hello. I'll be there from 2 until 5. We had folks stopping by Pappas the other day. Things are happening. There was enthusiasm. The team was 8-3. I blew my hip out. I didn't make it to Pittsburgh. Luke went up the mountain. Luke came down the mountain. And, you know, a lot of things to talk about here, Dennis Colazzos. But as they say, if the pass just was 3 inches, sort of a little bit back, we're talking about 9-3 and how we, it'll be tough without Marlin and all that. The losses in Pittsburgh are like multiplied by 5 to some degree, right?
Well, I've got to invoke a quote by the great Dandy Don Meredith. If ifs and buts were candy and nuts, we'd all have a very Merry Christmas. And we don't operate that way here at Coons Ford. I know the Baltimore Ravens don't operate that way either. They did their best, but they came up short. And now, as you mentioned, instead of being the number one seed in the AFC, they've dropped, I believe, number 3. And they're 8-4. And the Cleveland Browns are waiting for us. Had 2 weeks to prepare for that staying loss. To avenge that staying loss they suffered at M&T Bank Stadium. Every game was important, though, in this week-to-week league.
Well, let's go backwards here. You know, big drives, ball control, don't get points, Lamar throwing off the back foot, 7 sacks. Running game is it's not there. I mean, we're into December now. Whatever that thought was with J.K. Dobbins and Gus Edwards and what that was going to mean for Lamar, it's sort of Lamar getting in a phone booth at this point in various ways, whether it's trying to get the ball to Hollywood Brown or trying to get the ball to Mark Andrews or basically running the offense himself. Then there are times where he's in the pocket, looks a little statuesque and afraid to run. Like, it's just – it feels very disjointed to me, and – the frustration I sense coming out of him in the aftermath, the yips on the passes. I mean, he's not an accurate passer. I've watched this for 4 years. He can be incredibly lethal if given the right tools, but he doesn't have the protection. He doesn't have the running game. And I think the confidence level all the way around for the team doesn't feel the way it did, because I don't know that it can. You gain confidence from success, right? The success is what builds the confidence. There hasn't been a whole lot of building here since the Colts game.
No, I mean, he teases for a 3 to 4 week stretch where he looked like the real deal, like he'd taken the next step as a passer. And the last 3 or 4 weeks, he has clearly regressed. The mechanics aren't there. The decision-making isn't there. And of course, Tony Romo, that's the wrong analyst to have when you have receivers open and you're not looking at them, guys on crossing routes, et cetera. But he did point out the flaws in Lamar. And now with a big injury to Marlon Humphrey with that back end, this team has been decimated by injuries, not making excuses. Every team suffers them. But when you have Tyree Phillips, a right tackle, trying to block T.J. Watt, and Nick Boyle wasn't active for the game, so you couldn't even stick him over there. But they're just outmanned, outgunned. But the other thing is with the Steelers' nest, these games always seem to come down to the last play of the game, no matter how they get there, don't they?
Well, and then there's who makes it and who doesn't make it. In this particular case, it's your $40 million quarterback. It's your best offensive playmaker, I would say, whatever you call Mark Andrews at this point, the most consistent guy. And drops have been an issue, blown assignments on the back end defensively, and now the cornerback attrition. And I don't know where you stand on the two-pointer, right? I mean, the analytics are there, and I would have kicked the ball in a vacuum, right? It's easy for me to say, well, I would have X'd or Y'd or whatever. I'm not the guy who's down there coaching with Jimmy Smith, who can't get on the field, and Tavon Young, who's played 8 plays, and some kid I didn't even know his name on Wednesday, he was on the practice squad, Robert Jackson, that you're going to send these guys out into overtime. So it felt like a desperation play to me, especially when you have the best kicker on earth, right? Like, it's a desperation play. Not a lot of teams. I mean, half the teams in the league don't know if their kicker can make an extra point, especially literally, right? It's not a 50-50 play, but it's not a 97.5% play anymore either. And with our kicker, it's a 99% play is going to make the extra point. So you're going to force overtime. If you're not willing to force overtime in Pittsburgh and you're going to put it all on one play, that's riverboat, that's analytics, whatever you want to call it, but then it fails and you lost in Pittsburgh and you could have still been playing on one play, and the guy who lost it, your quarterback that you're counting on and your tight end who you're counting on, and it probably wasn't his fault. That's a tough way to get on a plane and leave Pittsburgh.
Well, it gets down to execution. They had the correct play called. And for me, I thought it was a great call right away. I was all in. I was glad they were going for it, because my philosophy there is, why leave it to fate? Why leave it to a coin flip to decide whether you're going to get the ball or not? Because the Steelers put up 17 points on the Ravens in the fourth quarter. The Ravens got tired. They couldn't stop the run. They couldn't stop the pass. And had they lost a coin flip, it was almost a certain loss at that point. Whereas if you go for two, if you convert, if you execute, it's in your hands. You control your own destiny. So for that alone, I applauded the call even before I knew that Marlon Humphrey's injury influenced John Harbaugh's decision. I thought it was the absolute correct thing to do. And like I told people, you can't have it both ways. You can't say, well, you know, if it works, it was a great call. And if it doesn't work, it was a horrible call. They just didn't execute, Ness.
Well, then it's a loss, right? It's a loss. And it's not a good loss, especially when you look down the barrel of what else is happening in the division and in the conference. I mean, it's a foregone conclusion. They're 8-3. They're going to make the playoffs, right?
And maybe.
Now, all of a sudden, if you lose in Cleveland, you're upside down in the division, right? You've lost to Pittsburgh. You've lost to Cincinnati. You would have lost to Cleveland. And now you're really staring down the barrel at one of the tougher schedules in the league, even though the two NFC games are here, and I'll respect that. But you're playing Aaron Rodgers without Marlon Humphrey. You wish you would have had the Packers on the schedule back when he was lying about his COVID shot and, like, you know, 6 weeks ago, and when you'd had Marlon Humphrey. You're sort of stumbling into this part of the schedule and this part of the season. And look, the Steelers could say that without Juju Smith-Schuster. I mean, sure. There's players. Conklin's clearly not going to be on the field for Cleveland this week as well. But there is only so much of this you can take when you're bringing corners off the street and having a play. And I know you're a big fan of Jimmy Smith, but he's been not noticeable this year. Then you notice him, and your coach basically says, I don't want to play with him in overtime. Okay. Well, then it kind of says all you need to say when one guy's got 22 snaps, the other guy's got 8 snaps, and you're like, I can't put them out on the field for 6 snaps here to get off the field and get the ball back and get my kicker out there and get the hell out of here and win, that you don't feel any confidence in your $40 million quarterback and your offense to move the ball or your defense to stop it. I don't know, man. I mean, it feels like go for it and we're going to get the 2 yards and come hell or high water, but it certainly wasn't a high confidence level for how you feel about either sides of the ball and how they played the last quarter of the game.
No, you don't, Ness. And they have 5 games left. And to me, they have to figure out how to win 3 out of the last 5 games. I think 11 wins gets them in. 10 wins, probably not in this hotly contested, tight race of an AFC, right? So they've got to figure out, you know, between the Bengals, the Browns, the Steelers, the Packers, and the Rams, which 3 of those teams are they going to take down? Because if they lose 3 of the last 5, they're going to be in trouble. They may be on the outside looking in.
Dennis Kalatsos is here. He's here each and every Thursday from 3 until 5, driving you home. Coons Baltimore Ford. He'll be outside. I'm wearing my Coons shirt here. By the way, this was Charger Blue to be happy about them beating the Bengals, but I don't know who the enemy is. Like, you know, I the Chiefs certainly, to me, look like trouble as a 1 seed, as a bye. You'd have to go out there. The barbecue would be delicious, and I have the points, so, you know, I'm putting it together. But I don't know if this is doable. It's kind of like when I said to my wife last year when Ronnie Stanley went down and they got him off the carpet. I think I said it to you the morning after. I said, the minute he got hurt, I'm like, well, there go their chances there. the thing with Humphrey and the pileup of all of this is them winning three or four games in December and into February at this point with the playoffs. Playoffs aren't start till the middle of January. Winning these games and thinking about the Buffaloes and the Chargers or the whatever the teams will be in the way, getting through the tournament, to think that this is a team that's going to do that well on the road in Buffalo, in Kansas City, Foxborough. I don't know, Dan. I don't know. Like, losing Humphrey gives me a vibe that this ain't their year.
We're a long way from that, Ness. And you have to think the last game of the season, the home game against the Steelers, that may be the game that determines whether they get into the tournament or not, right? So that's a big, big game. But a lot of football to be played between now and then. Every team has a lot to play for. I watched that game between the Bengals and the Chargers. And again, the Bengals didn't look good. They made some plays that were head scratchers. And it is very much a week-to-week league. Other teams, you have other players getting hurt every time they take the field. So it is very much a game of attrition. So we'll see. Health definitely will factor in, Ness, but one game at a time. And this Steelers loss, it really, really stings. But when Patrick McCary hurt his hand, he went out, and you got Tyree Phillips in there trying to block T.J. Watt. I mean, they're having trouble on both sides of the ball keeping people healthy.
Well, where are you with Lamar at this point? Because Lamar has to play with Tyree Phillips. Lamar has to play with Nick Boyle not playing. And Lamar has to go out there in the fourth quarter, down a couple of points, up a couple of points. The way they moved the ball in the first quarter, you started to get the vibe of, okay, all right, we're in the you know, but third and long and converting them the way they did, that's borrowed time. Third and long in this league is borrowed time. You might get it once, you might get it twice, you might get it for a quarter, but if you're going to eat in third and long, you're not going to eat long. You're going to starve in this league.
Well, again, Lamar does have a sieve of an offensive line, so for me, it's hard for me to evaluate him. How can he have confidence when the offensive line isn't holding up? How can he have confidence when they can't run the ball effectively? So to me, I think he's done well enough overall. His body of work in totality, as Coach Billick would be prone to say. But he's got to show some improvement, Ness. But without a running game, without an offensive line, I'm not sure what quarterback will look good back there.
For you with the receiving core, we spent so much time in the offseason talking about the receivers. And, of course, Eric DaCosta admonished all of us that we love Devin Duvernay and we love Prochet. And then, you know, they get Watkins, they go out in the draft and they get paid. This is the time of the year that timing, like all of that's supposed to be happening. And none of that happens with an offensive line that you said is a sieve.
Yeah, it's tough, especially when you go on the road. I mean, that you've been to Pittsburgh many times, and it's a very, very difficult place to play. I didn't see many purple jerseys up there. It looked like the home team fans held serve, didn't sell their tickets. Lots of terrible tales up in the air. It was very noisy. And again, it's a tough place to win against a team that was very, very desperate. They needed to win more than the Ravens. And look, it didn't come down to one play. It's always a combination of plays. And I thought the interception in the end zone in the first quarter was going to come back to haunt them. And it did. You take your 3 points there. You take your medicine. And you go back and kick off and do it again. So taking points off the board when they're there, they're critical in tight, tight games like these that tend to be.
No, the Steelers are missing kicks. And the extra point changed every piece of strategy from that moment forward.
It did.
When you take that point out of there, and it, you know, changed everything right down to the bitter end.
It really, really did. So every point's critical and every possession is critical. And lot of takeaways from this game. But then Pittsburgh travels to Minnesota this week. Then the Bengals, I believe, host the 49ers. And of course, it's the Ravens and the Browns. So it's a week-to-week league. And we can only hope for the best that we have enough coaching and enough leaders on this team that can get these players together and will themselves to a victory. This is a very, very big game against the Browns. It's as big, if not bigger. It's probably bigger than the game with the Steelers, since they just lost one.
We talked about it last week, and them having rest and them wanting to run the football against this defense. And Concerns for me that we didn't see enough of the defense, and the defense wasn't on the field much of the first half of the game, quite frankly. Stopping the run, stopping Roethlisberger, doing it when they needed to do it at the end, very problematic. And more than that, the breakdowns in the back end, right? Like, stop them, and then all of a sudden on 3rd and 12, you let the ball go over your head.
Yeah, you know, you guys are running wide open, ball going over your head. Deontay Johnson should have had a touchdown that went right through his fingertips. So, yeah, a lot of defensive lapses. But I was really disappointed in the Ravens' inability to stop the run in the fourth quarter. When you have Brandon Williams, Calais Campbell, Justin Madubuike, Jason Odafe Oweh, when you have those kind of guys, that defensive line should have held up better in the fourth quarter. To your point, they shouldn't have been winning. They should have been very fresh. They didn't spend a lot of time on the field in the first half. So not being able to stop Najee Harris, who I thought was a big difference maker in the game, a running back with explosion, which is something the Ravens don't have. You saw how critical that running game was in that fourth quarter.
Well, the running back with explosion is something that certainly is just it's sort of the potatoes that goes with the meat of what Lamar is trying to do, right? And to not have that threat and to week after week allow the other defensive coordinator, and now the Browns have had a little time to think this thing through here, they certainly must be licking their chops thinking like, oh, we were in last place 2 weeks ago and you were going to put us out of our misery. Hey, here we go. We've got to change. I mean, the Browns have to be feeling good about playing this game without Marlon Humphrey. And I think moving forward, this division becomes much more catfightish in that the Ravens have a game left with all of these teams, right? So, you know, sweep out, you win the division, you might even get a week off. I don't think they're in a position to do that right now with any sort of dominance. Now, winning these games with smoke and mirrors, I mean, Dennis, is as bad as I'm feeling and my feelings are hurt this week and you lost to Pittsburgh, they were a fingertip away from winning the game. I mean, it doesn't feel like they were that close to winning.
Yeah, it really doesn't. And what I thought was comical was when Nate McCrary got in there, the running back they brought up from the practice squad, he got hit for a 1 yard loss. Well, and somebody said on my Twitter timeline, well, he's not going to make a difference. Well, dude got hit in the backfield, 2 yards, 3 yards deep in the backfield. Earl Campbell would have lost. Maybe he would have gotten to the line of scrimmage, but when the holes aren't there, I don't care who your running backs are, and I don't care who your quarterback is. These guys need space and time, and the offensive line have been very inconsistent in being able to provide that for them.
Man, I'm wearing Coons Ford Oiler blue. You're wearing your Coons Ford Oiler blue. We lost Curly Culp this week. Yes. I was there when he went into the Hall of Fame. I got a picture with Curly Culp and all the old Oiler stuff. So every time I put I like the red one and it's long sleeve and keeps me warm, but the blue one's kind of nice here this week. What's going on with dealerships this time of year? I've been doing this 30 years. I don't know if I've mentioned that yet. Mm-hmm. And over all these 30 years, I've always had car dealers. And this time of year, it's usually, oh, we got the 23s coming in and it's only 21 and come get them. And I know the industry is different. We might be in the market for a little winterization around here. Although I'm convincing my wife we're not in New Hampshire. We don't absolutely have to have four-wheel drive. But let's just say we wanted four-wheel drive. What would you say to me right now? If my wife calls and says, Dennis, need four-wheel drive, need to have a little SUV, want to have a little snow vehicle.
Yeah, the Bronco Sport, I think, would fit the bill very nicely. We actually have about a dozen of them, so which is probably 11 more than any other dealer on the East Coast. So we're very blessed with inventory at this time of the year. We have over 150 new vehicles coming in, over 100 on the ground, and over 300 pre-loved vehicles in stock as well. So Ford keeps reducing the interest rates they're charging folks. So the incentives are there. We have some 0% available.
If my wife uses her maiden name, will she get a special deal?
She can use any name she wants to get a special
deal
because she's your wife.
Her maiden name's Ford.
Of course,
right?
Of course.
So I'm thinking like, you're going to give her the friends and family deal. You could say to her,
absolutely,
because your name's Ford, you get 0%, right? Because that's what they do. But
the names Ford and Aparicio each carry their own weight individually. When you put them both together, then you have magic. So we'll get a magical deal for your lovely wife, for sure.
Man, now that she found that, you got 11 on. Oh, man. She could be like,
I got them, man.
You gotta hurry. They're going to go, right? I mean, how long? They really are going to go, right?
They're going to go quick. Everything's going quick these days because of the scarcity index in the marketplace. But it's still a great time to buy a vehicle. It's a great time to trade up. And the deals are there. With inflation, what we're paying today might seem cheap a year from now.
All right, Dan. Well, I don't want to be labor a loss. I'd rather be labor. You got anything on Turgeon? You got anything there or no?
I was a bit surprised. I didn't see that coming. So I know it's I guess the conversation is it a top 10 job, 15, 20, 25, 30 in the country? I think there's some debate amongst the Terps faithful about how meaningful this job is and how high of a profile. But I think they'll be able to get a decent coach now. But it's they've got, 12, 15 candidates already.
Look, I want to give a free plug right now to our mutual friend, Bruce Posner. He does Terp Talk. He's here every Monday morning from 8 till 9, right around lunchtime. And he is the bleeding heart of the family here. I've had many employees that were bleeding hearts. I've tried to be a bleeding heart for four decades. Quite frankly, I spent more time being mistreated in College Park, enough to make me... I mean, there's only so much point when you're 53 and you've been treated like ish for three decades that you can only bleed so much. Bino's gone now. Like, Bino's out in DePaul.
Yeah.
And that happened kind of quietly because I didn't even know what happened.
I didn't until now.
Yeah, Bino's gone.
I thought he was still with the Terps.
Now we'll Google him. Somebody said he's at Marquette. I'm like, Marquette? Okay. No, he's at DePaul, and I feel bad because I was in Chicago 2 weeks ago. I would have bought him some pizza, you know. I love that kid. And now Turgeon's gone, right? And I'll just say this for the Terps people, and this goes back to the 80s, and not a knock on any one of you individually. Terps fans love to bitch, man. Like,
oh my God, like, it's a very rabid, very passionate fan base, Ness, you know that.
Yeah, and they're angry always. They were angry at Gary, and he won. And then Gary wins. I'll never forget this. Gary finally wins, right? And I always got on fine with Gary. I'm a Terps fan. I mean, I want him to win. I'm not, you know, have a station up here. We talk about the Terps more than most people do. This is 20 years ago, right? So Gary comes up after winning the championship, and we're over at the Art Donovan's place, right? Art's alive, and he had just won. It was like... the end of April. It was the Terrapin Club thing in Baltimore. He wasn't even happy. He waited like 3 weeks later. And this is 20 years ago. And I'm thinking, my God, my man, be happy. Somebody be happy at Maryland. That would be my rub. And by the way, Tom McMillan's coming on later this month too. I'll say the same thing to him. I'm like, has there ever been a satiated Terps fan? And this Turgeon guy gets beaten up. He's beaten up from the minute he got here. I've never heard a good word about him from any. I've never heard anybody say, other than the guys that wear the Turgeon outfits, who are neat, the Turgeonites, I've never heard a defender of Mark Turgeon, like for real.
No. And Gary Williams, I've never seen a college basketball coach that was better at X's and O's than Gary Williams. He would throw stuff at people that would make their head spin. So he was a fantastic coach. When I spoke to Bruce Posner the other day, He threw a name at me that kind of stopped me in my tracks, Rick Pitino. And I said, no, he goes, they're going to consider him. I said, they may consider him, but they're not going to hire him, are they? He went, you never know. I mean, they want to win desperately. So when Rick Pitino enters the conversation, when Rick Pitino enters the conversation, that's desperation, my book.
Is that going to sell tickets to whom?
He is 69 years old. Not that 69 years is a death sentence by any means, but I had to look up to see how old he was.
It's not a plan.
I don't know. I don't get it. I don't like it. And I'd be shocked if they hired him. Just the fact that his name was mentioned was shocking to me.
I don't know, man. I sort of ran from it. It's 10 years ago when Gary Williams said, I can't compete anymore because I'd have to cheat to compete. Like literally,
yeah.
Gary just said, I respect the hell out of Gary, but Gary, the fans were hard on Gary. His name's on the court.
Absolutely.
He won. I sat here for 15 years with Fire Gary. And then after that, it's Fire Turgeon. And they finally got their guy. They got him fired. He's incompetent. He's a bad in-game coach. He's a bad recruiter. Diamond Stone didn't stay. You know, he had the kid from Duke come up and Suleiman, like all on and on and on and on. And I mean, it reminds me of the SEC sort of mindset about the football coaches. I mean, you either want a Ralph Friedgen kind of person that's going to be a cornerstone guy, or you're going to play this game changing your socks. And apparently on the football side, they're very committed to where they are at this point to They're not Penn State. They're not Ohio State. They're not Michigan, but they're trying hard to be. And I guess that puts so much pressure on the basketball program that it has to be Superman in a cape. And I don't know that this program is what it was when it was Duke, North Carolina, Maryland, or what it was when Gary could do it without having to cheat. Although Steve Francis, I'm not so sure. And that was almost 25 years ago now. He won after that. But to me, the college basketball thing's so filthy. And college football at that level, honorable guys like you and me can take over a program. The only way you're going to win is to cheat.
Well, let me ask you this then, Nestor. Where do you put this program in terms of attractiveness in rank? Is it a top 20? Is it a top 25? Is it a top 15? Given that this area is a hotbed for recruiting, right? A lot of young men that play high school basketball, or they go all over the country and some stay home. So where would you put this job given, you know, what Maryland has to offer?
Well, if you talk about local, we've been through this for a long time, right? Like, this began with Wingate, and Russ going to Georgetown, and Muggsy going to Wake Forest, and the Dante Dingle and or Bright and Dingle going up to Massachusetts with Calipari. Not that there ever would have been anything illicit there. I mean, well, I'm going back 30 years, man. Followed this from the beginning. If you think the Morsell thing and the St. Joe thing that felt like the new, we're going to get Keith Booth, you know, when he went to Maryland, that if you're going to have that pipeline, it's got to be something that people here feel. I don't know if anybody here is ever going to feel Big Ten basketball, that I'm going to go hate on Minnesota or Northwestern or Iowa. So there's that. And I think, look, there's a huge divide between Baltimore and College Park that Charlie Ekman talked about when we were kids. And I don't go so far as that's a University of D.C. and like all of that. But it sort of kind of is to a lot of people in Baltimore who it might as well be a spaceship ride away. And the team does really know active marketing here, and Gary came up. Gary did a lot more up here. Vanderlyn and sat in my studio. Duffner, those guys, a long, long time ago. I never met Mark Turgeon. I literally never met Mark Turgeon. I was at a press conference 5 times, enough to know how chilly it was, and that nobody knew him, and nobody was ever going to know him. And so I have no dog in the hunt. I just know every person I know that considers themselves Terps faithful and prime. Don Moeller and Jeff Moeller are Terps people through and through. Every night for the last 10 years on their Facebook, they beat him up. And I just think, and Harbaugh gets a little of that, but Harbaugh's got a pelt, and Harbaugh's going to the Hall of pretty good. And running Turgeon out of here, okay, you ran him out. Now what? Who's right. going to come in and be the miracle maker to sell this? Again, I don't know that Turgeon was the right guy or the wrong guy. I know he's the wrong guy now that he's gone, but I also know he wasn't popular. And I don't. No. And for whatever that means for his coaching ability or his schmooze ability, you know, and all these guys are selling, you know, snake oil, quite frankly, if you're bringing in Rick Pitino, I don't know what the hell you're selling at that point. But they want to sell something, and they can't sell football, right? They can't sell football.
No, it's a tough sell, and look, Maryland basketball has been big for a long, long time. It means a lot to the alumni, that's for sure, right? The alumni, that is the craziest alumni base that you'll ever see, demanding, tough, high expectations. I mean, they just not want you to make the tournament. They expect to make the Sweet 16. So nothing wrong with having high expectations, but you got to have the right guy, and hopefully they'll get it right this time around. It'll be great for the
state. I don't know if it's Juan Dixon. I don't know if they're going to go homegrown, but whatever they do, it feels like the expectation level is we're going to hate the coach inside of 18 months. And I hope that's not the case, because I don't think that Turgeon was ever liked or given any opportunity that he wasn't Gary. And then you'd say, well, Gary was a god. Gary's name's on the court. Dude, I sat here and took phone calls for years. And I drove from Nashville to Knoxville when they went 20 minutes without scoring against St. John's. So, you know, I mean, I lived through, and I took those phone calls the next day. And that was when Gary was never going to win. And Gary took this job as an alum, as a lifer, as a mission to turn. I mean, nobody could have ever been more committed than Gary. And the same people that wanted Turgeon fired 20 years ago wanted Gary fired. And that's sort of the the college mind. That's just not the Terps. That's that thing about college sports that makes the SEC unlike your dealership, where your dealership is built on stability, built on the trust of the same people and their integrity. These programs aren't, they're not structured that way. They're built on how much money can we make and can you get me a result right now? And I don't care how you get there.
They love you when you win and they hate you when you lose. There's no middle ground. There is no but. You know, there is no look at the body of work, right? So what have you done for me today? And now with the kids that are one and done in school, it's not the old Terps, right? It's not the Lefty Drizzell Terps for sure. It's a different era and not sure it's for the better either.
By the way, they're honoring Lefty later on this month. There's a big event. Tom McMillan's going to come on and talk about it. It's like all the legends are coming out to sort of roast Lefty a little bit. So this will be good. The left hand.
Great stuff. Great stuff.
Hey, I appreciate you. Dennis Colatzos will be here on Thursday. We want a little bonus time today because, hey, you know, it's not every day that the Terps are going to fire their coach on a Friday afternoon in the middle of the day when I'm having a Pappas crab cake and doing the Maryland crab cake tour. So, by the way, Mike Bordick stopped by. I talked baseball for an hour with Mike Bordick the other day.
Very nice.
How do you think that went?
Probably very interesting, right? Especially with the pending lockout and everything else. So
we'll stop smiling. I love me some Mike Bordick, so it's good to visit with him.
Yeah.
You can find all that out at Baltimore Positive at WNST and all of our repositories. You can find Dennis on Thursday from 3 until 5, and again, Sunday now getting you ready for the 1 o'clock matchup out on the Cuyahoga. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. Even when we lose, we never stop talking Baltimore Positive.